welcome back. And of course, we'd like to have you guys check us out on where, Ava?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
And Facebook. Check us out and like us, please. Great places to get a ton of information, and you will enjoy it, I promise.
And our pictures.
Like it or
again,
else.
Again, if you were wondering.
Yeah. Like it or else.
People are going to be like, I'm disappointed.
I am so disappointed. Oh, crud. What in the world? Big time breaking news, Ava. Unless you've lived under a rock, this is really breaking. It's not even on my rundown sheet. Don.
I can't cheat.
No.
I looked.
No, there is nothing. Unless you've been under a rock, you've probably heard about the Buick that was in Wiper Lake that had gone in the ice.
I don't know. I guess I was under a rock.
You're living under a rock.
Well, I had sick 2.5-year-old twins, so I was like, I was in the trenches for a while.
It made all the major networks. It was on feeds everywhere. Huh. A Buick Lucerne that was left in the ice with just the back end sticking out of the ice for like the last, I think it was a week.
They didn't go get it?
Well, the breaking news is they just pulled it out today.
All right.
Yeah. So it is now officially out of the water. And the nice part for the gentleman that lost his Buick Lucerne, because he hit an ice heave at night. Mm. So that's the problem without snow. You can drive anywhere you want on the ice, and you don't think about it, and you don't think you're going to hit anything because it's really frozen, but it's not. Well, they did it free of charge. They pulled it out pro bono because of the publicity that they're going to get from it, because it had gone into so many different news releases.
Oh,
and
man.
That's not a cheap venture. So congrats to him, and congrats to White Bear Lake.
Did he get a fine?
No. If it would have been in over 30 days, then it would be a fine. So a hefty fine. But no. Had multiple people that helped pull that out. You can look it up wherever you want to on the World Wide Web. And, you know, we hear about it every year. It happens all the time. At least it was a vehicle that just got stopped instead of having to rescue 65 people in a lake chunk of ice that's gone, which with some of the conditions we've had, I think that could be a challenge as we start to look to,
Have you been paying attention to what the weather is going to be doing?
Yeah. Yep. This weekend is going to be a little cooler in the Red Wing area. It's going to be about
31 on Saturday.
Yep.
And then tomorrow looks like 44.
Yep. But overnights are going to be cooler, which is nice. So I don't like to have everything melt all at once. And I know a lot of people are going north to go sledding, to go snowmobiling, try and get that last bit of snow under the tracks and go rip it up a little bit before the season temporarily takes a rest. I'm not writing it off yet, Ava, as you know. March can be.
You know, I heard that they're saying we could still get snow and some cooler temperatures, but not that drastic freezing that we saw a few weeks ago.
Well,
we should be all done with that.
Yeah, we're not going to have multiple below zeros, but you know, I think we'd probably end up be more consistently in the 20s and a little 30s and have some snow. But I am not a weatherman. I don't want to be one. I wish I could, because I could be wrong all the time and still get paid, as we all love to joke about, and that is so true. So, but nonetheless, ice and the dangers of it are going to come back into play pretty quick here. So
yep,
that's how that works. Do have an ice story coming down a little bit later in the show regarding the U.S. ice fishing team and how they did in the Wisconsin.
Have they said anything about taking ice houses off of ice yet or no?
I believe that's Sunday, tomorrow.
Tomorrow?
I believe 28th or the 30th is 28th, February. I keep forgetting. My bad. February 28th, I believe, is the last day.
Oh, so it was on Friday.
28th?
Yeah,
it was Friday.
Okay.
Sorry.
So
forgot.
Make sure your houses are off.
Yeah, make sure your houses are off. Otherwise, somebody will chase you down, I suspect. So. Let's jump into that story that I saw on one of your favorite websites.
Oh, sure. Meat Eater?
Meat Eater, yep. And do you really need a scope that costs as much as your rifle? In fact, some say you need to spend two times as much as you do on your rifle, which I find kind of funny. As the quotes go, and you've, of course, heard that on the internet, make sure you spend as much on the scope as your rifle. Your scope should cost at least double what your rifle does. Put the scope on credit. Second mortgage rates are great these days. Also, your kid isn't going to go to college anyway. it may be true. But do you really need to spend that much on an optic for your rifle? And according to the story, the answer is no. And this is the reason. I thought this is the cool part about
this. That's interesting.
This. Yeah. And there's one thing to understand at rifle hunters. You need to match your gear to the need of the field. That's a big thing that you're not going to get from a gun writer. You're not going to get from a somebody on a internet forum. That's not going to be it, because everyone has a different need in the field. So keep that in mind when you're looking at putting money down on a rifle scope. And he was mentioning that when he was a new hunter, he was baffled by the range of prices in the market. You could pay $50 for a 6x24 scope, meaning 24 power. I won't go into the detail because it's too complicated to try and explain, but you can pay $60 for a 6x24 scope, or you can pay $3,100 for a 5x25-inch scope. Both have similar magnification range, and the Amazon scope even comes with rings and illuminated reticle. Why would in this particular case, the Night Force is what they like to use. Why is Night Force 62 times more expensive? First reason, on any scope, and this is really the key piece to this.
Is it the glass?
Scopes are more expensive. Well, there's multiple reasons.
Okay. Just hang on, Ava.
Just
wait.
Just like a car, they can be made cheap. So you can make it look good, but you will have inexpensive or cheap internal components that you can't see. Similar to when we talked about batteries. If you remember, we were talking with Matt from Amped Outdoors. The competition can make a cheap battery, but it's not going to last because the components inside are put together poorly. Scopes can be made with plastic or metal parts that will specifically impact the durability, and that's a big piece of it as well. When you look at something like, the same thing holds true with some of the guys we've worked with before, such as Vortex with the show, you put more money down for a scope, but you have the peace of mind that if you do fall down in the woods, that never happens, right, Ava? You've never fallen.
No, never once.
Never happens. Mm-mm. You're sure that the scope will stay zeroed in, and that's one of the big challenges.
I know, that's it is.
You always
wonder. Well, now, great. I have no idea.
Yep. And then the second key piece is scope tracking, which means the optic's ability to move the reticle exactly as the turret indicates, meaning if you have 2 minutes of action up, or the reticle only moves 1.75 up when you wanted to move 2, as the distances increase, that can turn a vital shot into a miss. And of course, the final reason for getting an expensive scope, what that does, your particular judgment earlier and statement, they offer better light transmission and clarity. And you can both see probably quite well during the day, but the problem is when it gets to be the critical shooting periods of time when the animals are moving and you need to take that shot, what is the key there? The key is what is that a particular scope capable of pulling in for light. And the clearer the optic and the more light it transmits, it's easier to count the points on a mule deer in the minutes before shooting light is over. So if you're skeptical, check that rundown out on the best scopes under $500. That's going to be on the Meat Eater website. I believe we have the link on our site, don't we? Meat Eater? I think we did.
Okay.
But
they're easy to find.
Check it out anyway. But there's a ton of scopes out there, but that's done by Adam. He's a gear editor at Meat Eater, meateater.com. And so kind of a neat thing, but understand that you don't have to spend a ton of money on it, but understand that there are important pieces to having a good scope and having it make for an effective hunt. So there you have it.
All right.
Now another ice story. Would you like an ice story?
Sure. Why don't we cool things down a bit here?
There is no home field advantage for the Team USA at the World Ice Fishing Championships in Michigan. This is in Lakeville, Michigan. Although Vilnius, the capital of Lithuania, is 4,526 miles from Tamarack Lake in Lakeview, Michigan, anyone still awake in Vilnius when the final bell signaled the end of this year's World Ice Fishing Championship could have heard the triumphant shouts and cheers of the Lithuanian ice fishing team all the way over to Vilnius as they sealed their victory and repeated as world champions. Now, you got to wonder, and this is one of the reasons I brought this, everybody wonders, how in the world do you have a ice fishing championship? What do you do in the ice fishing competition? It's bizarre. It's the highest level of competitive ice fishing in the world. All the best anglers from across the globe square off against each other on, obviously, a frozen sheet of ice. The championships included 10 countries, Estonia, Finland, Kazakhstan, Latvia, Lithuania, Mongolia, Norway, Poland, Sweden, and the U.S. It was just the third time the U.S. has hosted the event, first time in 2010 in Rhinelander, and that was won by the U.S. Sitting in third place after day one, Lithuania distanced itself from the rest of the field on the second day when every angler in the team finished in the top four of their assigned zones.
Wow.
So that's kind of where it gets to be kind of crazy because it's a zone and they don't get to do anything else to attract fish. Now, this is where it kind of gets funky. I'll give you the winners. Finland was silver and bronze was Norway. The individual gold was Lithuania, followed by a teammate from Lithuania for silver. And Odd Henning Hansen of Norway got the bronze. I had to make sure I read his name correctly. So it's different in sport ice fishing and how it's practiced. And you're attracting fish by keeping nearby via baiting. You chum the water from ground bait made from breadcrumbs, sugar, cornmeal, and other organic ingredients, a skill seldom developed or used in sport of ice fishing, standard ice fishing, or sport fishing. Anglers are also restricted to fishing within randomly assigned zones, which change daily, and the competition is off limits during practice. No running and gunning on quads or snowmobiles to search for bigger, more aggressive fish. Understanding the behavior of the targeted fish species is also critical. Only panfish and rough fish count towards an angler's tally. Despite little experience and understanding of the behavior and feeding patterns of Northern American panfish, the team deftly navigated the steep learning curve by masterfully working tiny tungsten ice fishing jigs in pre-baited holes, recognizing precisely when it was time to switch holes so as not to waste precious time. And pretty cool. But they changed it this year, the first time that they ever done catch and release, which was going to be used now and continue to be used in the future as catch and release tournaments across the country have been a big deal. The Team USA members included Keith Niffen for Eaton Rapids, Michigan. Chad Schaub.
Eating rabbits.
Yeah, Eaton Rapids. That's called a faceplant on a raft. You're eating rapids. Chad Schaub of Ludington. Zach George of Hastings, Michigan. Jeff Kelm, he's had him on our show.
Ludington.
He's the tournament director for the Masters Walleye Circuit. Let's see, who else? Kevin Kowalski of Duluth, Minnesota. Nate Winters of Ogdensburg, Wisconsin, and Coach Myron Gilbert from Brooklyn, Michigan. So, a lot of cool stuff, don't you think?
Yeah.
I get education on what international ice fishing competition is like.
Do you remember the ice fishing contest that happened like through an app that was like nationwide?
Yeah, something dog. I forget what it is now.
Super cool.
They do it open water.
Oh, okay.
They do it in open water as well as ice.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, you just have to upload it to the yep. app server, and mm-hmm. there you go.
Yep, exactly. Real quick before we wrap, as time obviously flies by, South Dakota, I want to make sure we hit all the states right now.
Gotta.
We're getting her. South Dakota bills, they're addressing guides. I won't hit on the rest of the bill that was introduced, but a guide bill was going to be tried and be passed. Just one of three states that don't currently, South Dakota, doesn't currently have statewide licensure system for hunting and fishing guides. The bill would have changed that by requiring all guides and outfitters operating be licensed by the state. The bill failed 10-2 on the House Agriculture and Natural Resources Committee. Opponents argued this would push people out of the guiding industry, potentially hurting the state revenues, which is exactly what would happen. South Dakota Wildlife Federation was behind the bill. Many South Dakotans report that non-resident guides are leasing exclusive access to private land in the state. The increased competition for hunting spots without contributing any additional funds to the state's wildlife department. The voting took place with a commission appointed by 8-person commission by the governor. It would have required the commission to establish licensing and eligibility requirements. They would have had to have what activities that the guides and outfitters may legally conduct. It had set licensing fees for them, insurance mandates, record keeping requirements, which is what has to happen now. Prime example, any tributary of the Great Lakes, or in this case, the Mississippi River, you have to have a guide's license, and you have to, I mean, it's a mess to try and get everything done.
Sure.
It's disaster. It really is. It would have also made it a misdemeanor for anyone found guiding without a license starting in 2026, and guiding on state land is currently illegal, and there are license requirements on federal lands. But I'm happy that happened. I know a lot of guides over in South Dakota, yeah, and I know that they work hard, they're all safe, and they do a great job. So I think that was the right call to make. So very cool. Speaking of very cool, how fast the time goes by. I know, we just whip right through this thing. When Don's not here, I'm telling you, it's like 20 minutes only takes six. But I don't know, we're shortening time. Well, tell you what, I'm Eric. This is Ava. We are the Valley Outdoors, minus Don, and we hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Spend it outside. It's going to be a beautiful one, and enjoy and be safe. Talk to you soon. We're out.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.